The Initial Reaction podcast still reeling from the excitement of the Packers' victory in the NFC divisional round playoff game. JP Kadoran was there. We're going to talk to him. I'm J.R. Radcliffe of Lake Country Publications and now newspapers, and across the internet from me, JP Kadoran, rebranded of Spectrum Sports. JP,
it's our birthday. It's our birthday. Time Warner Cable Sports Channel is officially retired. You can catch us now at Spec Sports WI is our Twitter handle, and Spectrum Sports on Facebook and MySpectrumSports.com. It's a whole new identity. It's weird a little bit because in theory it's a huge change, but nothing really changes except for I lose five syllables from my name every time.
Yeah, it's a little bit less of a mouthful to say Spectrum Sports and Time Warner Cable Sports Channel. That's exciting for you.
A little bit. It is. So we got some new t-shirts today at the studio, and life is good. Today is our birthday, and we get to spend it still talking about the Packers season, which back in November, I didn't really think that we would do. I remember distinctly telling my wife that my January just got pretty open after they lost to the Redskins.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to my third city in 3 weeks or something like that because of Detroit, then home against New York, but then Dallas, and here I go off to Atlanta on Saturday.
It really is pretty ridiculous, although I don't know. It's such a weird thing to think they could lose at any point or they could win the Super Bowl. And I guess this sort of happens to every playoff team, but it's a very difficult thing to wrap one's mind around to know that they can go from 4-6 to winning 8 consecutive games, many of which against playoff teams. I mean, the Houston Texans are in there, the Seattle Seahawks, and then of course the last two games. I mean, those are good teams that they're beating. It's crazy. I'm curious, I want to get your take on some of the things that you saw in Jerry World from far away, as your tweet pointed out, how far away you were from the field, which you tweeted that and then said, by the way, I'm not complaining about my view like many media people
important.
Do. It is very important because that is actually what I thought you were doing. Like, oh, there's another media person, JP Kadoran, leave it to him to tweet about how far he is from the action. But
okay, so you're right. I did make that disclaimer because I wasn't saying, you know, look at my press box seats that I didn't have to pay for. Look at how far away I am, especially because there were people above and behind us. Like, there's a whole other section that has even worse seats. It was more of, like, this place is so huge that we were actually, like, relatively close, and everything was still so far away. And you get that. It's kind of the same in Arizona because that's also a new stadium. So you're pushed back there, and it's, you know, for people that are supposed to be analyzing what's going on, you know, it's a little hard to do when if they're anywhere past the opponent's 30, it's a far way away.
Yeah, but you need like three sets of binoculars just to have your eyes trained on all the different people you're trying to follow around.
For sure.
I do get the sense, I've never been to Dallas at any point in my life, I do get the sense that's just a venue you have to visit to really appreciate the scope of it. I mean, it looks really big on TV, of course, but you can't really appreciate it, I don't think.
Yeah, and outside isn't that weird. So I'm very fortunate in that I've already been there because of the Badgers in the Final Four, you know, 4 years ago or whenever it was. So, and that was a few different times in and out of the stadium and going out into the city of Dallas and actually being out there, as opposed to the ballpark, which is out in Arlington, which might as well be Oconomowoc if we're talking Milwaukee. I mean, it has nothing to do with the city of Dallas. It is completely on its own. I went from the airport to the airport hotel to the stadium, and I don't think I ever got within 30 miles of Dallas. So
really? Wild, okay.
Everything is bigger in Texas, including the suburbs, man. It's legit. But from the outside, it looks just like Arizona does. It looks like a spaceship that just landed. I mean, kind of out in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of parking lots. But once you get inside, that's when the scope of it is just, it's beyond impressive. It's enormous. It's new. I was somewhat immune to the video board. You know, I don't know. Every stadium is kind of getting that. You know, every stadium kind of has its shtick of something like that. You know, like, and I keep bringing up Arizona, but that's because it's a very nice stadium that was recently built. And, like, that has, you know, those two walls, you know, one of them which is retractable at each end zone. So it's bigger than that, and it's impressive. But, yeah, it's not maybe as novel as it used to be, but it was cool for sure.
I wanted to focus in on one of the heroes from that game, Mason Crosby, the kicker. I mean, his work definitely went noticed, the fact that he kicked two 50-plus-yard field goals in the last minute and a half, including the game winner at the buzzer. But I think for the most part, Aaron Rodgers, and rightfully so, gets the headline when there's a win like this and his throw to Jared Cook and everything. But I wanted to dive in a little bit on Mason Crosby because I do find his story interesting. I talked actually to his old soccer coach in high school, Wesley Kidd. We do, after all, JP, we do cover prep sports as our primary beat, I would say. So I wanted to catch a little bit of a prep sports angle. Went back to his high school, found a guy, Wesley Kidd is his name, the soccer coach. He was pretty close with Mason throughout his high school career, knows a lot about watching Mason and play football in high school and a little bit about the athlete that he was. I wanted to sort of tell that story a little bit because there's some interesting stuff there, and I thought he had some stuff that I wasn't aware of in terms of things like the soccer season it's in January in Texas because football is king to the point that there are no other male sports going on during the football season in the fall. Wow. So yeah, I thought that was kind of cool. But so I'll spend a little bit of time with him, and then I wanted to ask you a little bit about Mason Crosby because in 2012 it seemed pretty clear that this guy was done. I mean, he had missed, this is mind-boggling to me, he had missed a field goal in 8 consecutive games. 8 consecutive games, and really he missed 9 consecutive in games in which he attempted a field goal, which, you know, by today's standards, and those standards then too, like, there's just no excuse for that. You would be off the team. There's no team that would stick with a player like that. And while the rest of the league was making 80-some percent of field goals, he was making 60%. And yet they stuck with him. They showed patience. There was an immediate dividend in the fact that he was back on his game in 2013. He's, at this point, the best kicker in franchise history. He's made 23 consecutive playoff field goals, and including the two biggest in the Dallas game when he made one from 56, one from 51 yards to win the game. I mean, it's crazy. Do you remember back to 2012 when he was going through those struggles? I mean, what do you think it was that – was it just stubbornness? Like, why would they stick with him? I mean, no, obviously, it was just brilliant foresight.
Yeah, because he was so good. Because coming out of Colorado, he was the one who could kick, like, 63 yards or something like that. Like, he was so good in college and then so good after college, too, that I think they recognized that this was a slump, that it wasn't a sign that he was done, that it was just a slump that he was going through. And so they stuck with him, as they tend to do with a lot of their own draft picks, not so much free agents or anything like that, but they stick with their draft picks, and they like him a lot, and you see why.
And Wesley Kidd said something interesting about the renovations that were going on at Lambeau Field. I don't remember this being brought up at the time, but speculated very briefly that maybe some of the, because there was a lot of different construction equipment around the stadium around that time, that maybe that affected some of the wind currents around the stadium and made it more difficult for field goal kickers to convert, and that Mason maybe got caught up in that, in addition to, I think, what everybody speculated around here was just, you know, a loss of confidence and things of that nature. And I know people were still very high on his ability to kick the ball into the end zone on touchbacks, and that he was still a good directional kicker and things like that. So it wasn't like he was bringing nothing to the table. It just, in the NFL, you just don't survive a season like that at the kicking position. There's just too much talent out there. At least there was. I don't know if there really is right now, but definitely then there was, where you wouldn't normally see a team hang on to a guy like that. And it isn't even just the kicking position. Think about some of the guys who've really stepped up. I mean, Ladarius Gunter has totally come out of his shell as a guy who was an undrafted free agent that they sort of stashed for a little bit, and he played a very small role, and now he's blossoming as kind of the most important cover guy on the team. Nick Perry was sort of seen as a disappointment, and now even with a club on his hand, he's making some of the biggest plays of his career. So in the NFL...
Micah Hyde.
Oh, Micah Hyde, totally.
I think his fourth interception in the last 6 games that he came up with. And that was, like, one of the coolest interceptions I've ever seen. Like, to be able to read and jump the gun on that.
I know.
It was so cool.
Yeah, someone said on Twitter, I think Robert Mays at The Ringer, that's an interception he made on Wednesday because he knew the coverage scheme so well that he was able to jump that. That's not a read and react. I mean, it is, but it's not something you do without prior knowledge.
The cool thing, talking to him after the game, is that, yes, he obviously saw it in film, and especially when they played him last time, that he goes, whenever they get in that stack, it's either a run or a pass. And the cool thing was for me is that he said he had to check with Ladarius Gunter on it because he couldn't just go. It wasn't something where he could take a risk and then he'd be covered. Like, it was something where Gunter had to be covering both men, basically, if Hyde ended up going and he checked with Gunter as they lined up and Gunter said good, and then Hyde goes, and that's all I needed to hear, so I went.
Crazy.
So that was awesome hearing that in the locker room afterwards.
Yeah, that is amazing. Premeditated. Just,
right?
Just fantastic. And it's a fine line because you need young talent in any pro sports league, but in the NFL in particular, because the contracts just aren't usually that long. You need young talent to be really good really fast. And at the same time, you're not getting the best out of your young talent because they're not developed yet. So the Packers have had the success with guys that have stuck around for a while. They've had some success with young talent as well, but you know, I look to next year already, and I'm not looking past what's left this season, of course, but I'm thinking like...
Yeah, get the rest of this. Let's look ahead to next year.
I feel like even though Demaryius Randle and Quentin Rollins have had their struggles this year, I feel like, A, they're probably still bad. They've been battling injuries all year. And B, you know, a la Devontae Adams, you think maybe this third year is where you really start to see some major leaps forward to the point that these guys become some of the better players at their position. I mean, that's a huge jump from where they are now, but I feel like that happens in the NFL, and it's so hard to play that to play that fine line, and that's sort of why Ted Thompson is such a perplexing figure. You know, you never really know. I guess he favors young talent so much, but at the same time, he does let that young talent that he starts with develop into something special, and that's why the Packers are continuously good, because of these guys that he drafted 2-3 years ago that are finally seeing the light of day.
Yeah, and that's what he did with Crosby, just to bring it back full circle to him. And it's to the point where, so you were saying how he's, I don't know, did you even say he was underrated or just another aspect that you wanted to focus on? But, like, I wasn't, like, that doesn't even register to me because I just expected him to make it. Like, to me, the throw to Jared Cook was so much bigger because, first of all, if he doesn't catch that, if that catch gets overturned, they have the ball with 3 seconds left and, what, like 50 yards to go, 60 yards to go, so another Hail Mary. You know, but that set it up. And when you're within 55 yards in a dome, I expect Crosby to make it. And that's, you know, that's probably just a testament to how good he's become.
Totally agree. He's definitely become the closest thing to a sure thing that you can bank on. I mean, I don't know if any kicker feels like a sure thing to me once you're beyond 50 yards, but Mason has shown Crosby's had, you know, he's got the leg to hit just about from anywhere on the field, including from 60, I would say. And yep. he's been quite a weapon. 23 straight playoff field goals. Last time he missed actually was against Atlanta in the Georgia Dome when the Packers went on their Super Bowl run in that divisional round game in 2010. So I want to talk again, Wesley Kidd, the soccer coach, formerly of Georgetown High School, where Mason Crosby attended high school. We'll bring him in to chat a little bit here, and you'll have to forgive. There's a couple beeps during the process. I do record these on my cell phone and had an incoming call. I can't help it. It was my sister. I blame her. So that's what those beeps are, but you can hear everything in the audio exchange. So give a listen to that.
My guest is Wesley Kidd, former soccer coach for Mason Crosby, kicker of the Green Bay Packers. Of course, the guy who is a big part of the Packers winning in Dallas over the weekend. Wesley coaches not far from Dallas, 2.5 hours, I believe, just about. And formerly at Georgetown High School, where Mason Crosby was a multi-sport star. Actually, you saw him as a soccer player, and I'm curious about that, first of all, because here in Wisconsin, soccer, boys soccer and football, they are held both in the fall. So it's very difficult for an athlete to be, you know, both sports full time, which is what Mason definitely was. What is the layout there prep sports wise? Do the boys soccer teams play in the spring, or were they happening about the same time?
Actually, the high school football, obviously, high school football in Texas is king. So nothing goes head to head with football.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
Yeah. And for soccer, actually, we start in January and play January, February, and March.
Interesting.
So it's kind of a winter sport in Texas.
Okay, interesting. So he was able, because I know here we'll have guys who will kick for the football team while playing soccer, but they aren't really guys who play both sports full on. And I know Mason was an all district safety as well, so he was not just a kicker. As many elite kickers are, you know, many of them do play multiple positions. But you saw him as a soccer player, and you coached him not quite for all 4 years. So can you kind of give me a sense of what happened in his senior year and why he was kind of switched to full time football?
Yes, sir. He played his freshman year. He came out his sophomore year, made the varsity team, started for me as a central midfielder his sophomore and junior year. In club soccer his sophomore year, he hurt his knee was kind of banged up, and I think he had to have a small little surgery procedure on one knee. And then his junior year during a playoff game, he hurt his other knee his junior year. And I, whenever he got the offer from Colorado, my understanding is he felt like that it was best not to play his senior year and concentrate on football, which I think we both can agree is probably a good decision.
Yeah, no doubt. But did that hamper his ability to kick the football, though, to have those knee problems?
No, actually, I think it probably made him better. I think it probably, through rehab, I think it probably made him a little bit stronger.
Yeah, I suppose. So, I mean, that had to be a little disappointing because I'm sure he was pretty dang good, and now he's just focusing on football. But I guess there's not much you can do in that case.
Yeah, you got a kid that is getting a full ride to go play college football, and even in high school, you could see he was kind of special as a kicker.
Yeah, my
I know the family. If you know the family, there's just the greatest family in the world, and it was totally understandable. I sure would love to have him this senior because he was a heck of a soccer player. He was a very good soccer player.
Yeah, I believe it. I wonder if he had played in a different state, given what football means to the state of Texas, if he would have considered playing soccer on the college level. I mean, in Wisconsin, we get so few football players who wind up going pro. So, In Texas, I guess it's just a different mindset. I'm guessing if you're good at football, you sort of eschew everything else to just focus on that sport.
If you play football in Texas, that's what you do. I will tell you, I truly believe if Mason was, let's just say, grew up overseas, he would have been a star soccer player at a high level.
Interesting. So, With the fact that we have so few pro football players from Wisconsin, I think pretty much everybody sort of cheers for the Wisconsin guys around here. In your case, I'm assuming there's still some regional love for a guy like Mason Crosby, but the fact that they face the Cowboys, I mean, is it conflicting for you, conflicting for other people who know him when you see him do so well, but it comes at the expense of Dallas?
Well, I will tell you, I had many text messages kind of cussing me on Sunday when he kicked the field goal, so it was kind of funny. In the town he grew up in Georgetown, it's kind of split. They love him to death, and they want him to do well, but then there's just a huge Dallas Cowboy, fan base there. So it was kind of mixed emotions there for a lot of people, but I think everybody in Georgetown is extremely happy for him. And like I said, if you know a family, you can't root against him, I promise you that.
Right. And he's developed into probably the greatest, I think it kind of goes without saying now, greatest kicker in Packers history. And prior to that, and I'm sure you're aware of this, in 2012, he'd had so many problems that I think it was a foregone conclusion that his run in Green Bay had probably come to an end. Did you have any conversations with him around that period of his career, and where was his head at, if you had a chance to talk to him? And if you didn't, I guess what were you seeing and what were you thinking was going to happen with Mason going forward?
I had a chance to talk to him, but not about that. That year, I actually had the privilege to come up and see Mason and go to Lambeau Field and watch him play. And he was struggling. He missed a field goal. And after the game, you could tell it was just something you didn't want to bring up.
Right.
You could tell it was really weighing on him. And it was after he got the contract and he was just struggling that year. But we all knew that he was a good kicker. And he just had to work through it. I felt for him that year too. Like I said, I was with him after the game, a Jacksonville game, whenever, the ball was hit. And I think y'all were doing construction at Lambeau. And I think it kind of screwed up the wind currents inside the field. But that thing was going straight through and just kind of shifted off to the right.
Yeah.
But, I'm glad he worked through it because, like I said, he's a special individual.
When you saw him in high school, was it? I'm gathering it was more than just a leg. I mean, he's so athletic and able at multiple things. When I see a really good kicker around here, I think, man, that guy could do something in Division I, and then he doesn't. It's sort of, to me, sort of a mystery science trying to figure out which kickers are going to excel at the next level. I don't know if maybe his leg was just at such another level that you knew he was going to be great, but were there more attributes that he possessed that hinted at what was maybe to come?
I will tell you that you see some really good high school kickers, but whenever you see one special like that, the ball comes off the foot different. It sounds different. The trajectory of the ball is different. You see high school kickers maybe put in the end zone on the kickoff. But
right.
The way the ball came off his foot was something totally different. than what you would see from a good kicker. Like I said, the sound of it and the whole thing was just was kind of special.
Was it a surprise to you that he decided to go to Colorado? Was there any thought that he would stay closer to home?
Well, that was one of the big problems with Mac Brown that didn't offer him at that time, and people still go back to that.
Really?
You know, say that Mac Brown, yeah, because up to that point he never did offer. He did not offer scholarships to kickers.
Okay.
And what my understanding, and they went through right after Mason Crosby went signed. They went through a few years here in Texas where they did not have very good kickers, and they pointed back to that quite often.
Now that the Dallas is out of the equation, unfortunately, Mason, everybody can cheer right for Mason go exclusively in on the Packers for the NFC Championship game, right?
So, I will tell you, most everybody in the Austin and Georgetown area are big Mason Packers, and they're going to be with them 100%.
That's awesome.
We hope he makes it back to Houston to kick it in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, no doubt. You guys will get a chance to see him up close in that case. Well, thanks very much. I really appreciate it. Anything else we should know about this guy?
Special as a special of an individual he is. Like I said, his brother, his sister-in-law, his family. Just awesome people. And,
cool.
And last thing, if you can keep his sister-in-law in y'all's prayers. She's 27 years old and going through a very tough time in her life with ovarian cancer.
Right.
So I'm sure that if the Green Bay Nation will pray for Brittany, she would love it.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thanks, Wesley. I really appreciate it.
Hey, thank you very much, and good luck to you guys.
All right, thanks to Wesley Kidd for joining us on the podcast. Loved talking to him. He did make a reference there at the end to Mason Crosby's sister-in-law, Brittany, battling ovarian cancer. There's some good stories about that out right now from Rob Domofsky and others. The community of Georgetown, pretty closely located to Austin, Texas. It's really about 35-40 minutes north, and then kind of between Dallas and Austin. So they definitely have a Cowboys fandom there. Some torn allegiances, as he mentioned, because that is absolutely Cowboys country. So a little heartbreak administered from the hometown boy over the weekend. I'm curious to know what it was like, JP, on Sunday. You were there when the kick goes through the uprights. I mean, that's a crazy, crazy moment. What was happening
nuts
around you?
Well, this remains one of the weirdest things about this whole sport and this whole industry to me. When we're on the road, you guys probably see on TV, you see those shots of Ted Thompson up somewhere in the, you know, sitting next to Mark Murphy somewhere in the stadium.
Yeah.
That's right next to us. Like, literally either directly next to us or directly in front or directly behind us. This game, they just so happen to be directly in front of us. So, like, I got to watch their reactions to everything. And it's Mark Murphy, Ted Thompson, Elliot Wolf, who is a candidate for the 49ers job, along with Brian Gutekunst. I don't know how to say his name. I apologize. But, like, those six people are all sitting right in front of us. And so in the final minutes of the game, I distinctly remember tweeting – well, I don't think I tweeted it, but I remember thinking it and saying it to some media members around me that, like, you guys think you're nervous – how about the row in front of us? Their entire life's work is coming down to this drive and, like, that replay and this field goal and just watching what was going on. And then, so I watched the first field goal from my press box seat right behind all them. And then the second one, I was kind of getting positioned to leave. Like, if you were relating it to a fan, it would be like walking to the top of the aisle or, you know, so that you could quickly, whatever happened, you could get out of there. I was walking to the edge of the press box next to the elevator so that I could quickly get down and then maybe like get some reaction of them coming in the tunnel. And as I was doing that, I'm kind of pacing because I'm nervous. Just, you know, am I going on another road trip next weekend? Is this season over? Is this going to be crazy? So as I'm nervous, all of a sudden I look behind me and Elliot Wolf is behind me like pacing. And this is like out in the open, nowhere near his seats. He's sitting there like pacing, trying to figure out what the heck's going on, goes to the bathroom and everything. So I just thought it was crazy that you think of how nervous we all are, everybody at home watching this take place. I can't imagine if you're sitting there when you're at Jerry World, you know, a mile away from what's going on with just absolutely no control over your life. You think about, let's just say, hypothetically speaking, Mason Crosby misses both of those field goals. So the Cowboys end up winning by field goal. now all of a sudden Ted Thompson is a failure. Mike McCarthy needs to go as head coach. Mason Crosby isn't a clutch kicker anymore. Like, all these different narratives just because of two minuscule things that happened in a game. You know, and even the way that Crosby kicked him, as it stands, they were barely in. Does that mean that he's extra clutch, or, you know, is he scraping by? I think there are just so many hypotheticals involved in this game that drive us crazy, and I just can't imagine what it does to them.
I wrote at the Preps Alcove this week my 10 for Titletown, looking at some the 10 things that went right. When they lost to Seattle a couple years ago in the NFC Championship game, I pinpointed 15 plays or moments that went wrong. And I'm glad I did that, because I go back and I read them and I'm like, man, I don't even remember that. But if that had gone differently, what would have happened? You know, number 12 on my list is still that level of important. So I kind of did the same thing for this game. And it's not even just a couple things at the end. I mean, what if they don't clock the ball on first down as they're trying to move down the field? You know, do they get the touchdown instead of the field goal there? What if, what if they don't call that sort of bizarre, unsportsmanlike conduct penalty for entering the huddle? I mean, that was something that sounds like most officials agree that was the right call, but it's sort of this weird thing that you could totally, if it hadn't been called, nobody would have noticed, or at least nobody in you know, the unwashed like us watching the game, we'd never notice. Yeah. And then maybe they score a touchdown on that drive. I mean, there's so many little things that could change the entire course of the conversation.
And then expand it to the bigger picture of what if they don't beat the Bears on that field goal in week, whatever that was, 15.
Oh, yeah, right.
Right? So, like, what if they don't beat them, or they don't beat the Lions? So what if they still get in the playoffs, but now they're the sixth seed going to Seattle? You know, do they lose in the wild card round instead of potentially a Super Bowl winning team just because of that win? Because that would be, you know, Detroit would have won the division. They would have hosted the Giants. I would have said the Giants probably would have won. So then the Giants are facing Dallas. Maybe they win for the third time. Green Bay is going to Seattle. Seattle probably wins. Then it's Seattle Falcons again, so that's not a huge difference. But, you know, this could be New York at Atlanta or something like that in the NFC Championship game. Who knows?
What if you had never been born, JP Cadoran? You would not be reborn as Spectrum effect. Sports.
What if the butterfly effect with Ashton Kutcher was never a movie?
Was it a movie?
Yeah, to a lot of people, it never was.
That's what I'm saying. So anything else that you took away from that game that maybe – because we all have – at this point, I think read a lot about this game and dissected it quite a bit. Anything else that you think has gone underappreciated from this game?
No, not really. I think you brought a good point about Nick Perry and the club, just how well he's doing. I think I'm going more big picture again of just, like, how is this team here? Like, even as I'm watching it happen, this team isn't, like, an NFC championship game team. It's an NFC championship game quarterback. And then everybody filling around, which I also think maybe that's the best compliment I could ever give them, because it means that different players are stepping up and playing their best games in the biggest games. And so maybe that's a good thing. But, like, I look at this defense, and without Clay Matthews and Julius Peppers doing, like, anything, they're containing some of the best offenses in the league. And I just wonder, like, how that's happening. How is this team here? They were 4-6. They were awful. I have a hard time processing how this is all happening.
Yeah, and what I'm amused by, and I've said this before on the roundtable and other places, is that there's no blueprint to a Super Bowl champion. There's no two or three attributes you can say a team needs to win a Super Bowl, because there's just an element of randomness. You have to get into the playoffs. That's the part that's not random. Good programs get into the playoffs. Some teams back in and don't belong there as much as others, but for the most part, getting to the playoffs is the actual work. And then the playoffs require luck, bounces, things that you can't account for. So I saw somebody say, well, look at the final four teams. They all have an elite-level quarterback, in case you were wondering if you need one of those. Well, sure, that certainly helps. It definitely helps your cause. But at the same time, there's so many teams that have – I mean, Eli Manning is the best example. He's not an elite quarterback, and yet he had a really good run in the playoffs a couple times and got them to Super Bowls. Joe Flacco, I mean, we can use the Trent Dilfer example that everybody uses, but what about the Buccaneers? And there are other teams that have won Super Bowls without elite quarterback play, and – then you look at the last couple of years, well, you need an elite defense. The Broncos won it last year with a great defense, and before that it was the Seahawks with their great defense, and the Patriots maybe not quite as much. Now here we are with four teams, and nobody is saying that any of these teams have great defenses. They all have a couple playmakers, passable defense in the case of like the Steelers and the Patriots. But it's funny that in the immediate aftermath of what sort of this championship caliber defense mentality that dominated the NFL, we now are left with four teams that are four phenomenal offenses with great quarterbacks and defenses that are really just going to have to hold on for dear life. I mean, people think this game could be in the 40s with Atlanta and the Packers, and who would be surprised if it was? I mean, it really is going to come down to like one or two drives where either they make them milk a bunch of clock or somebody makes an interception or something that's going to turn the tide of the game, because there's not going to be a lot of stopping in the NFC Championship game.
You have now identified one of the biggest problems I have with sports and with the sports media, of identifying this team won a title, that must be the way that you have to do it. It happens all the time, especially with baseball. Like, I distinctly remember probably 3 years ago whenever it was, San Francisco won with unbelievable pitching, and so everybody said pitching is the way to a title, and then I think like the next year the Royals won
and everybody said
you need offense.
Yeah,
it's just, it's insane, and I don't know why we do it in this industry, and it bothers me so much every time. So thank you for hitting on it without me even prompting you.
Yes, so Atlanta, Green Bay, the game will probably end 54-49. It's gonna be hard to stomach. Even as difficult as this game was, it's hard to imagine the Atlanta game being less exciting, because it's gonna be just this offensive showcase, you know, back and forth. It certainly was that way in the regular season too, and I'm pretty nervous. Even talking about it, I'm pretty nervous. I give them a 50-50 shot, JP. I don't know where you stand on that.
Yeah, with the Cowboys, my confidence level was a 5, and then it went even down to a 4 once Jordy Nelson was ruled out, you know, so I'd said 50-50 and then went to probably like 40%. For some reason, it just feels like that was the biggest hurdle they needed to clear, and I don't know if it's the 2011 game in the playoffs against the Falcons that's sticking with me, or if it's just my continual doubt of Matt Ryan as the leader that a team needs, or what. I don't know what it is, but there's something about it that just has me thinking the Packers are going to win. I don't want to say I'm feeling confident, but it's just where that instantly came in my head. Or maybe it's because they're just this close and now I need to do all this planning for Houston. You know, I need to cover all my bases. So maybe I'm just kind of planning ahead anyway. I don't know what it is, but I think they're going to win. I really do.
All right. Well, we promised you we'd talk a little bit about the Milwaukee Bucks this week. We'll have to delay that chatter for a future podcast.
Then they beat the Cowboys. And
yes. And the Bucks did not win any of their games, or at least not ones that you figured they would win. So they continue to be an enigma, if that is the proper term. I think it is. They're a very enigmatic team. Although All-Star rosters should be announced, I want to say even tonight as we record this. Tonight is Wednesday.
Thursday night. All-Star starters get announced Thursday night. All-Star reserves get announced next Thursday
night. Got it. So you can expect to hear the name Giannis Antetokounmpo pronounced in a various assortment of ways as a starter for the East. I would certainly expect that to happen. The Wisconsin Badgers basketball team held on. They did not play supremely well, but they did beat Michigan, and they were number 17 in the country coming into that game. They beat them on Tuesday night, so they're coming off a big win over Ohio State in their previous game, and still looking like a team that can win the Big Ten. They lost that game to Purdue and got manhandled a little bit, but doesn't seem like they're off course per se. I know they've had some underwhelming performances here and there, but that is still a team that I think is going to win the Big Ten. I don't know how you feel about that.
Yeah, I just don't see them losing. I mean, in the Big Ten, I just don't see them losing enough to take them out of the title race. I think Michigan State and Purdue each have a lot more weaknesses than the Badgers do. I don't know. For me, it just seems almost a foregone conclusion. And I can say that because I'm not a diehard Badgers fan. There's a lot of you people are worried about jinxes and whatnot, and I don't know. To me, it seems like they're kind of destined to win. Now, in the tournament, I think a lot of other teams can catch up with them. I don't think the Big Ten is good at all this year, which I normally am a Big Ten homer, and I would never even think of saying that. But I don't know. I think they're the best in the Big Ten this year, which might not be the best, you know, 8 to 16 teams in the country. I don't know.
On the prep side, which is what we do for a living, you, of course, can find our prep basketball hub, Roundball Rankings, which is at mycommunitynow.com/roundball. I got all kinds of stuff for you there. We've got our Player of the Week, scoring leaders, career scoring leaders, Beyond the Box, our top 10, or our top 15, I should say, in both boys and girls basketball. We've got new number ones this week, the Maguanago girls. They're undefeated. Two freshmen and two sophomores in the starting lineup on that team. The Pewaukee boys have one loss. They've lost, or won, I think, 14 straight now. They are maybe 13 straight. They are number one on the boys' side, so that's where we stand there. You can also check out another of my Preps Alcove columns this week. Asked area football coaches their thoughts on the Sunday football game between the Packers and the Falcons.
Yeah. And, that was good stuff.
Yeah, got some comments from them, a little bit of a scouting report, who they think should be MVP, that sort of thing. So check that out at lakecountrynow.com.
You know what I took away when I read that, which, again, was so entertaining. I loved reading it. But they all came up with different things. Like, you asked, I don't know, what, eight area coaches?
Yes,
like, what
six, are some but yes.
They all came up with different things, which just, I think, goes to show you it's just such a crapshoot anyway.
One thing they did say,
that was really funny.
A lot of them did say confidence is the difference between the 4-6 team and the team that has won eight straight. Just confidence. And I guess that's the type of thing that sort of jumps off the screen to a lot of people, because things are working, that it seems like they're more confident, but there just isn't a jitteriness to it. I mean, the whole offensive architecture with Aaron Rodgers, it looked like happy feet when he was 4-6. He's still moving around a lot in the pocket, but it looks so purposeful now. It looks like everything is planned out. And I don't know if it really is, but it sure feels and seems that way.
Nice. Yeah, so that's fun. I recommend going there. If you're going to go to our website, which is myspectrumsports.com, I think you can still probably search Time Warner Cable Sports Channel and get there. I know you can still type it in and you'll get there.
Yes.
So whatever. But we just had Homestead Whitefish Bay on Friday night. We have Wauwatosa West against Pius, I want to say, this Friday night. For some boys who decided to feature on Franklin's Max Alba, who is used to winning on the football field. And now Franklin basketball team is having a heck of a resurgence right now. They're 8-3, which has already surpassed last year's win total. Went down to Kenosha, talked to Sydney Cooks, who is a top 5 national recruit. Which I knew she was good. I didn't know that she was that high, which I think is higher even than Arike Agumbawale was. So some good stuff down there as well.
Yeah, she's a McDonald's All-American playing at Kenosha St. Yep. Joseph. And we talked when Arike was selected and Diamond Stone and Henry Ellenson that same year, how it had been such a long time since Wisconsin, the state of Wisconsin, had had a McDonald's All-American. And now, a couple years later, Sydney Cooks, and like you said, a little bit under the radar. And I think it's because she plays at a small school and is in Kenosha kind of – I won't say that they don't. I mean, they get coverage. It's just they're kind of close to the border. They maybe just don't get the same level of notice. But
well,
she's 6'4".
Not under the radar enough. She's not under the radar enough to not get any scholarship offers.
Yeah,
she's
no doubt.
Going to Michigan State, which is quite nice.
Yep, 6'4", has a very smooth jump shot. I mean, she can dribble the floor if she has to. It's not, you know, not what they're going to try it and have her do, but she certainly can do it. Can beat the press pretty much single-handedly. Excellent, excellent player. They went to the state final last year. Didn't win the game, and it's going to be tough for them to get back. They lost some key players from that team. They do have another key player back who's a big part of the picture for them. I actually saw them play Tuesday night. They lost to Martin Luther, another team that's on the rise as well in girls basketball and boys basketball for that matter. They're having a nice little year. But St. Joseph's now has a couple conference losses, which is tough for them. But Sydney Cooks is definitely fun to watch if you get a chance.
There you go. So that's what we got.
All right, man. Well, safe travels. No trip to Atlanta, right? You're staying home?
Oh, no. I'm
You're going to Atlanta.
Saturday. Yep, Saturday night to Sunday morning.
Beautiful. Say hi to Donald Glover for me. I am super excited.
Didn't like that show.
Really?
I don't know.
Well, I tell you what, and little sidebar, because you know I'm a big TV guy. That show is so universally beloved. I mean, just total. Every critic can't stop talking about Atlanta, right? So I've watched it, and I didn't dislike it. It was fine. I'm not really a comedy guy. This isn't really a comedy anyway. It's sort of a half hour. I would say it's almost a surrealist painting of TV in a way, because it's very random. I think somebody described it as Twin Peaks with hip hop, and that's sort of what it is. It's just really, really different. And I liked it. I didn't even watch all the episodes though, and I gotta say, I'm kind of surprised we haven't reached the backlash stage from it yet, because it was so universally beloved, and it's kind of weird. I mean, I really wanted to love it, and I liked it fine, but it's a little odd. I really liked
because well, I I loved him in Community.
Oh,
no
doubt.
Community is one of the funniest shows I've ever seen, and he was fantastic in it. And in this show, he's nothing like that.
No, he's much more, much more understated.
The show isn't a comedy. So Atlanta, the city, isn't a comedy either, and I intend to make it laugh when I show up. Take that.
Not sure that was well done, JP, but I'm gonna give you a pass. So
thanks
again, guys, for listening to Initial Reaction. We'll be back at you next week talking Super Bowl.
Oh my God, that's ridiculous to even think about.
Super Bowl.
Yeah, maybe we will.
Maybe we will. And if not, we'll talk about the Bucks or JP's misadventures in Atlanta or something way less interesting.
Perfect. All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and we will talk to you next week. Goodbye, friends.